across languages, across leagues, across Europe. This is The Crossover, NBA Europe, where basketball meets boardrooms with Stuart Hodge.
The bids are in, talks are back on. The question is not now whether the NBA is going to launch a league in Europe, it's whether this ends in conflict, compromise, or a new shared structure. I'm here today with Aris Barkas, the man who broke the story that reopened this whole conversation. Aris, a very warm welcome to The Crossover.
Nice to be with you, man. Great to meet you, even through a podcast, because we have talked in the past, and you also was one of the guys that initially in the UK broke the 7-7 stories. When when everyone was still believing that some reports were over the top coming from the States, you were the one that dared to shout that the king is naked.
I love that phrase. Yes, I think we've got a responsibility as reporters sometimes to make sure that the truth is reported, however hard that can sometimes be. It seems that the winds of change are at play a little bit in terms of the story right now with regards to NBA Europe and the way that is going to come across. So you're a man who is very well connected to the grid here. So let's strip it right back now. Where are we as it stands today?
I think that the real news right now is the fact that there is a solid financial interest for the new league. And to some extent, this applies also to European basketball. I think that there will be a lot of twists and turns until we get in the end zone. And right now, the big question mark is if the talks between the EuroLeague and the NBA will create something out of nothing, or if we will end up having something that I have reported on and I have been afraid of since 2 years ago, two rival leagues in Europe fighting for supremacy, which is, in my book, a doomsday scenario.
I think that is a bit of a nightmare scenario. But I think either product being separated from the other would dilute what they could both produce, right?
I totally agree. This is something that is a position that is totally repeated all the time. Also by the new EuroLeague CEO, Cis Bueno, who has been in the past an executive for NBA Europe. So he really knows what's going on. And I think that this is a kind of division that will not be productive in any means. We have lived through such a division in the past. You are too young to remember this, but this happened when the EuroLeague was first created back in 2000. For one season, we had two leagues, the EuroLeague, which was in the first season of the new project, and also the Super League, which at the time was organized by FIBA. In the past, this lasted just for one season, and it simply didn't work. And there is a prime example for speaking about the Greek market, about what didn't work. Simply put, Panathinaikos was playing in the Super League and Olympiakos was playing in the EuroLeague. So this broke the product, even if I don't really like this word when we speak about sports, in two. And when you broke something, it will not work. It's simple as that.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. And I get the reticence to use the word product, but given that this is a sports business story, that's why I use the terminology. But in terms of Cis Bueno, I think you're right to bring his name up. Cis Bueno, for me, has played a blinder since he's come in as the EuroLeague CEO. What he's done is he's changed the landscape from one of division and confrontation into one where there is room for productive conversation. But he's also been quite politically savvy in my book, in terms of the way that he has gone about making sure that the valuation story gets covered, making sure that there is language of communication of productivity, but making sure that the product that he's representing and the league that he's representing, that he does that in a way that maximizes the best possible outcome for the teams and for the bodies and stakeholders that he represents, right?
Yes, because on one side you have in the NBA a board of governors, but on the other side, everyone has to remember that there are also owners, active owners in the EuroLeague. So I think that the right word here is compromise. I don't think that either side can get the maximum of what they're planning to. And let's say an honest compromise between those two sides will end up being the best possible outcome. Of course, this is not something that we can predict or we can decide. It's not that easy. And that's why I'm saying that we will see a lot of twists and turns right now, because we have an indication of the numbers and the money that is on the table. But other than the fact that we know that a lot of money, unprecedented amounts of money for European basketball are on the table, we don't know the details yet.
So in terms of, you're talking about the maximum possible outcome for either negotiating party here, what is the maximum possible outcome for the NBA in terms of NBA Europe? And then for the EuroLeague, what's the best possible outcome for the EuroLeague?
I think that the best possible outcome for both sides is the 24-team league, which is a scenario that I have reported that it's on the table. I was not the only one that reported this. It's already out there. It's just a work in progress. A work in progress. Nothing is set in stone right now, and I don't know if the NBA is willing to make such a bold step, because it's very different to have a 16-team league, especially on the financial side, and having a 24-team league. So there are a lot of moving parts, but ultimately, even if we start, let's say, with a division, I think that the end of the road will bring us a scenario like this: a very expanded European league. I hope that will satisfy everyone, and everyone will be part of it. And even the markets that right now are not fulfilling the standards of the NBA will be included. Not only because of their tradition or because of their love of basketball, which of course can be overlooked, but because when you try to create something that big, you can't really keep out the legacy markets, let's call them like this, that even if they are not big in bulk, even if they don't have, let's say, the potential of the UK, they are already spending a lot of money on basketball, and they have a big fan base, and they can give you automatically a boost.
So who are you talking about here? Name exactly the markets that you're talking about, because I think it's important that we're specific.
Those are obviously the markets that are not mentioned in the initial plan of the NBA Euro franchises. We're talking about Lithuania. We're talking about Serbia, or if you want, the whole ex-Yugoslavia region. And we're talking also about the Israeli market, which right now is in a very strange situation because there is a war going on there. But basketball is big in Israel, and also in the Middle East. And there is also a very delicate exercise that has to be done. EuroLeague decided, and for me this was a very conscious, a very well-thought decision, to expand into the Middle East and include a team from Dubai. As far as I know, this is a red line for FIBA, because they want to include teams that are part of the FIBA Europe zone. So this puts, let's say, the border in Israel right now, because Israel is also included in the European zone of FIBA.
Yeah, I can see why there's some sort of difficulties in that market for sure. But I think you raise an interesting one when it comes to Serbia. Now, the best basketball player in the world is a Serbian. It's Nikola Jokic, right? Luka Doncic and other people are from that part of the world. I know Slovenia is a little bit over, but there are a lot of these European countries that might not be the most financially replete, but that happens to be the countries that a lot of the great basketball players that we see in the NBA currently are from, that are European players representing in the NBA. So I just wonder how much there might be a bit of a kind of leverage play there for the EuroLeague, perhaps, in terms of seeing what these players think. And then I suppose that brings us on to the leverage question in general, which, who do you feel has the leverage kind of going into this meeting later in April?
This is a very good question. And I have to be hard with all my friends in Serbia. Yes, the talent is there. Yes, the interest is there. Yes, the clubs with a great history like Partizan and Crvena Zvezda are there. But this is a different kind of talk and a different kind of negotiation. And also, I have to underline also one thing, that Serbia is a very big part of the EuroLeague right now. The Serbian derby, the Belgrade derby, is heavily promoted by the EuroLeague. However, neither team has an A license. Neither Serbian team is a cert holder right now. So this also demonstrates the fact that when we talk about the business of the sport, Serbia is not part of the conversation. Serbia is part of the conversation when we talk about talent, when we talk about tradition, when we talk about a very admirable pipeline of talent and production of player that goes right now all over the world. The Balkan Gang, for example, of Illinois in the NCAA. We have this kind of never-ending production of top talent. So this is something that global basketball can take advantage of, even without including Serbian teams in the fall, at least at first. And that means that the clubs, and I know for a fact that both clubs are trying to do this, are trying to boost their performance off the court on the financial aspects.
I think it's a very, very interesting point, Aris, around the geographical regions of the whole thing. And I think it's also, it raises a question for me just about the culture shift here, right? Because there is going to be a real culture shift between traditional European basketball and I think one of the real appeals for the NBA is obviously tapping into that fan culture and looking to go into the European market with an appreciation. And I spoke to the players at NBA London after the NBA Berlin experience, and there was a real positivity to try and embrace that and for the NBA to properly look into expanding into the market. However, I think for me, one of the difficulties that there is in doing that is there's going to be a cultural resistance, right, from traditional European basketball stakeholders. How do you think that the NBA in doing this manages to actually tackle that? And regardless of whether plans move ahead and what fashion they take, how do they make sure that they chip away at that cultural resistance that does exist?
I get your point, but I really believe that this is already over. You know, this conversation is totally theoretical, and already EuroLeague is a premium product. And this, for example, in Greece, is obvious in the ticket prices. Basketball suddenly is one of the biggest and more expensive spectacles that you can see in Athens. So the fact that the NBA has a very different approach, and the US leagues in general have a very different approach on what it means to go to an arena and watch the game, I think that it's already solved, and it's solved a little bit abruptly, like it happened with the English Premier League. It was almost overnight that suddenly football was not the game of the masses anymore. You can go in London and see a lot of tourists going to see a football game and not the fan base. I'm not saying that this is happening in basketball. I'm not saying that this is the situation right now, for example, in Athens. But it's obvious that you have to be at least middle class in order to have the ability to pay for the tickets.
I think it's an interesting one. I think where I was going with the question was more down the direction of anyone that is maybe a fan of a European team as it stands. There does seem to me to be like a few fans that are out there who are somewhat reticent about the NBA coming over, and it's the franchises thing. It's the wording there, because your March the 9th piece on the EuroLeague moving from clubs to franchises, that felt important, because I was wondering, is that a defensive copy of the NBA playbook, or are we talking about a structural shift?
We are talking about structural shift, and it's not something that has to do with building a defense line towards NBA Europe. I believe that it's a transformation that can even help collaboration. Because NBA Europe is also trying to understand the intricacies of European sports, just Greek sports, European sports in general. They have to understand the situation with the multi-sports club. They have to understand the fact that if you are a Panathinaikos fan, you will follow Panathinaikos no matter where the team is playing or no matter the sports. It's not that if, for example, there is a new team in Athens created specifically about the NBA Europe that will get the fan base of the guys that like basketball. This will be a very, very small percentage of the guys that are invested therefore in the sport, because all over Europe, and this doesn't have to do with Greece, there is a kind of, let's say, devotion, and I'm not using this word because it was the slogan of the EuroLeague, but I think that it's the right word, to the club. You know, you are born as a fan of one club and you die as a club of one, of the same club. They say that you can change political alliance, but you will never change the sports club that you support. It's like that. And this is something that I think that NBA Europe is also starting to understand, and they start also to understand the fact that you can expect to have, let's say, a great team in Madrid and rival the popularity of Real Madrid. It's impossible. If you want to go to Madrid, you need to have Real Madrid. Okay, maybe Atletico Madrid also, but it's not like you will boost a team like Estudiantes, for example, and suddenly the brand of Estudiantes will represent basketball in the city. No, it's always going to be Real Madrid.
I think touching upon Real Madrid is important here, because as it stands, of the holdouts in terms of EuroLeague renovation, Real Madrid, it's the domino, isn't it? It's the symbolic domino, but also culturally, every other which way. And I think it's important for people that maybe are coming across this podcast from say like in the UK here, or from countries that have maybe heard of Real Madrid in a footballing sense, but maybe not in a basketball sense. I think it's important to invite those people into the conversation and maybe say that it was a shock to me when I moved to Spain as a child that you had Pau Gasol at the time playing for Barcelona, and it was massive over there. It was to me, I thought basketball teams were basketball teams, football teams were football teams. But I was having a fascinating conversation with the journalist Miguel Candeas of Obola during the time at NBA London. And we were talking about how the talent pipeline at these clubs is the exact same as it is for football, like in basketball. And then you have water polo, you have cycling, I don't know, you have all sorts of athletic pursuits, and it's all with the hats on of these sports teams. Now, for people who are wondering about a franchise in Manchester, in London, right? I wonder how important it is to get on top of that, the, as you mentioned, between Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, the intercity rivalries that you have in football. Can basketball tap into that? Can NBA Europe in particular obviously tap into that? So that's one point that I would like to put to you. And it's good journalistic practice not to ask two questions at once, but you will forgive me. So I think that's one point, the intra-city competition that could present. But then also I want to bring it to Real Madrid as the domino here, because that's maybe a good place to start, if I'm honest, Aris, is how important is that domino, and how do you feel the wind is blowing in terms of where they are at in this conversation? Because they seem to me, in some ways, the kingmaker here.
I don't disagree at all. I think that right now, even if Real Madrid never publicly talk about the whole NBA Europe project, I think that everyone knows that Real Madrid was already in talks with NBA, and it was among the first clubs that it was mentioned as potential collaborators of the NBA Europe project from the six existing EuroLeague clubs. Of course, the fact that Real Madrid hadn't signed the new 10-year license with the EuroLeague put fuel in this conversation, and even now that we speak, there is no signature in the new license. However, and that's why I totally agree that Real Madrid is the key, and I think that everyone agrees in that. It's not also a secret that Chus Bueno was heavily endorsed by Real Madrid. After, let's say, 2 years of keeping their distance from the EuroLeague, with Chus Bueno, everything changed. Real was, let's say, one of the main driving forces in getting Chus Bueno elected as the CEO. Also, the fact that Real Madrid hasn't signed yet the license, especially if we go to the franchises model, it's just a footnote. Real Madrid remains one of the main shareholders of the EuroLeague, and also one of the teams that created the EuroLeague back in 2000. So ultimately, if anyone has a real answer about the plans of Real Madrid, maybe we'll have the answer to the whole situation between NBA Europe and EuroLeague. Right now, all the indications that we have is that if 1 year ago it was almost certain that Real Madrid was totally focused on the NBA Europe project, right now they are just evaluating the landscape. They are negotiating, and also they have a very special relationship with the new EuroLeague CEO that can make all the difference, even in the possibility of a collaboration between all sides.
We have talked about how the language has moved very much to a collaborative tone, which I think is indicative of the way that the story might be transpiring. But the nature of any one of these situations is, and we've seen situations between different sort of sports leagues and sort of mergers being proposed in the past, but I don't think we've ever seen anything of this magnitude where it can have such an effect on basketball as a whole. Obviously, globally, ecosystem wise, this is colossal, right? It feels to me like it's potentially, if managed correctly, when I look at the UK, very much football market, right? I think this could be the differentiator. If you get Manchester City or Arsenal or whatever playing basketball, right? Then what you're going to have is you're going to have people going, oh my goodness, Arsenal playing basketball. Well, why are Chelsea not? Why are, you know, it seems to me that the explosion potential, especially when you look at the global pull and gravity of the Premier League, I think you could end up with a situation where this could be the thing that catapults basketball to be irrefutably the globe's second most popular sport. However, there's another scenario where this becomes a fractured and fragmented moment, which totally creates a chasm right down the middle of basketball in a global sense. So there is so much at stake in this moment. And it's not just a basketball story. It's not just a sports story even. It's a massive global business story as well. This is potentially creating a new market for capital investors to have properties that they would otherwise not be able to have, and in a whole new way as well. So there's so much at stake here. For you, as someone who's covered basketball for decades professionally, how do you feel in this moment just about that the sheer gravity and importance of it?
I try not to think about this, you know, because it's really big. I agree with you. You ask me about the leverage. In my book right now, things are very simple. EuroLeague has the big brands and the tradition, and also a very vivid fan base. On the other hand, we have to admit that the basketball as a whole underperforms right now in Europe. And this is where the NBA sensed or seen the data and decided that this is a great opportunity for us on a business level to enter the European market and create a new market where everybody else has failed. And I'm speaking specifically about the UK. So, yes, if you ask me, this will be a dream scenario. But for many years, and I remember, for example, the former owner of the London Towers, who was Greek. London educated, but Greek. Mr. Tsopanakis, who is also right now, he's a businessman. He's also a part of the Greek Federation in a consultant role. So he was very disappointed about the fact that no matter how much you push the scope for in the UK, you couldn't get basketball to be mainstream. So I think that even if in my book this remains totally difficult, if you have the NBA brand and the awareness that the NBA brand brings to the sports, then I think that basketball as a whole should take another chance in trying to be mainstream in the UK, because if this happens, then everything will change. But ultimately, this has to do with the UK market, and I'm not trying to sell myself as an expert on the UK market. What I really know is that it will be very, very, very difficult to get a mainstream audience invest their time and their money in basketball. The logical thing to do will be, yes, to get the big sports brands from football to create basketball sections, because this worked all over Europe. And this is, let's say, a tested path, but still this is something that we will have to see in the end, how it will work and how it will pan out. And I'm not saying this because there were many reports, even from the BBC, about big football brands that are not interested at all in investing to basketball. And up to a point, I totally understand this, because if you have a business that is thriving in a sport that you really know, there is no need to take any risk. But because I cover basketball and I like basketball, I really would love to see a way for the new project, because EuroLeague has also tried and couldn't create the traction that was expected in the UK. I would really like to see the NBA try to wake up the UK market, because that will be a game changer for the whole market in Europe.
Yeah, the UK market is going to be the one that is the one with the biggest potential, right? And it's the one that nobody so far has been able to crack. And yes, I understand the reports about certain football brands. And again, the same way you mentioned about product, football brands to me, I'm like football clubs. That's kind of where it's at. But you're right to use the correct language given the framing in which we're talking in. And I would say when it comes to these big football clubs, do you know what, I'm going old school. When it comes to these big football clubs, I understand from a business standpoint why they wouldn't want to take risk, why they wouldn't want to dilute their portfolios or their balance sheet or any aspect of it. However, though, and this is where all sport is petty, but football more than any, right? If you're looking across the city and one of your rivals has a successful basketball team and has people gravitating to go and watch them, then don't get me wrong, there's a million questions that need to be answered here, right? Basketball arena infrastructure and multiple basketball arena infrastructure, not like only just one of them, right? But football is petty. If Arsenal are playing basketball and doing it well, then Chelsea and Spurs and all of these other clubs, although Spurs in a football sense have plenty to worry about out with basketball right now, but these all look at it and they must be thinking, right, do you know what, we want a piece of that, regardless of how it's risky or regardless of any of the rest of it. So I do feel that it only takes one club, one proper football brand to be the catalyst. And I wonder, surely the NBA knows this, right? Surely they know that. So to me, the big question, there's been a story that has emerged. We're recording on Tuesday. There's been a story that's emerged today about an investment group who are interested and have a bid in for a London franchise. And there's other people connected to basketball and other things. There's a lot going on in this London market right now. And that's not even beginning to consider Manchester. And what I'm thinking is the NBA must know this. And they must be prepared for not just the conversation around NBA Europe in October 2027. They must be thinking about this in terms of the denouement of this and the potential expansion of this over time. And I just wonder how much of that thinking is occupying the thoughts of the Adam Silvers and the Mark Tatums and other people who are at the head of this process. And then how much of the accommodating the existing EuroLeague infrastructure is there. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be a UK-focused project, far from it. But what I'm wondering is whether they're looking at the behemoth brands rather than the mid-tier or lower-tier ones. To me, it strikes me as an important part of the conversation. The NBA, I don't think, wants to try and focus on sort of one market over another, but surely just the process of the gravity of some of the brands that may become involved here, that's maybe going to become unavoidable, right?
Let's say that the NBA Europe is really unlucky that LeBron James has share in Liverpool. Imagine what will happen. And then it's not like I'm knowing something. I'm just throwing out the idea. So what will happen if LeBron James comes to play for one season in the London franchise, to use the terminology of the NBA? And, you know, thinking about it, this might be the only way for the mainstream audience in the UK to notice basketball. So, yes, it will need a shock. It will need something that will be unprecedented. So I really think that the NBA will like to have something like that. And this is the only way, because we had a discussion in Athens in June with Mr. Ivazoglu, the CEO of the NBA Europe and Middle East.
Yeah, George Ivazoglu.
George Ivazoglu. So the whole discussion was between him and select basketball journalists from Greece, because George, okay, is Yorgos, he's also from Greece. So then this kind of meetings happen all over Europe. And we were discussing that in some cases in the UK, maybe Fox Hunt will be more popular than basketball. So, yes, the NBA knows that this will be the key, and they know that they have to bring something really, really big in order to get the mainstream audience interest. And London is London, okay? It's one of the biggest capitals in the world. So you need this kind of market, as basketball in general. And if the NBA managed to unlock this kind of potential, I will just tip my hat on them. And we will all understand that this is truly the beginning of a new era.
All of the bids are now in. Obviously, it's a non-binding deadline, so there's no pressure on people to sort of carry on their interest or such. But the bids are in. There was obviously strong reports of the over £1 billion and that sort of thing, and some really eye-catching numbers. But should we read those strong numbers as proof of some sort of inevitability here? Or is this just another domino, another chess move in the whole valuation leverage conversation?
Yes, and this is the other part of what I was saying before about EuroLeague having the brand and the fan base and the tradition. The NBA seems to have the capital, seems to have the know-how, and seems to have the connections, and seems to have already a contract with Amazon for all over the world that can be used also for the new league. So in the end, some kind of synergy will be created. Even when the clash 2 years ago seemed to be inevitable, I never stopped saying and writing that, look, in the end, because this happened also 25 years ago, there will be some kind of collaboration. Because realistically, I don't think that there is one way that one of the two leagues will prevail. And what ultimately means prevail, you know, when Super League and Euro League, when Super League was practically abolished because FIBA said that we can't continue like this, all the main Super League clubs, which were at the time names like Panathinaikos, like Maccabi, like Anadolu Efes, if I remember correctly, all those clubs on the next day were part of the EuroLeague. So it's simple as that. You know, and it's not about winning and losing at this point. I think that this is also what has changed in the whole rhetoric of Adam Silver and also in the rhetoric of EuroLeague, because Jus Bueno never said anything bad about the NBA. So the whole tone has changed. And yes, this doesn't mean that we have a deal. In my opinion, this just means that the negotiations just started, but at least all sides are again on the same table. And I hope that there is a way to get the most out of a situation that, no matter what happens in the end, will be positive about basketball. Even if we end up having two leagues, the amount of interest, especially in a virgin market like the UK, will be unprecedented. So, okay, yes, this Inter will be focused on a new league. But again, it will be about basketball, something that never happened before.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective on it. So let's talk about the idea that things might split, right? So actually, let's talk about both. So if this ends in compromise, what does that compromise actually look like in practice? So that's column A. And in column B, if it does not end in compromise, what's the most likely shape of that split, do you think?
Honestly, I don't know. Because there was a lot of talks about teams leaving the EuroLeague for the NBA Europe. But now, with the exception of Asvel, which is led by Tony Parker, there is no other clear candidate who would like to move to NBA Europe. And the latest information from the EuroLeague side are that even Asvel would like to stay in the fold, at least for the near future. So a lot of things will happen. A lot of things may not pan out, and we may end up with a division. But on the other hand, at this point, I think that there is no going back. Nobody will say that the NBA Europe will not happen. And also, if it's named NBA Europe, we have to take this into account. The league's name is not revealed yet. And maybe the league name will set the tone about what to expect from this league.
That's a really interesting one. I hadn't even thought of looking at it like that. And do you know, when I think about the way that this might actually sort of pan out in practice over time, it does seem to me that this is not a story that is going to be running until October 2027. This is a story that is going to be running for a very, very long time and may well take one shape to begin with. But then you've got to consider how cultural things change, not in a year, not in 3 years. It's over time. It's gradually, right? And what we're creating here. So look, if you look at the internationalization of basketball and particularly from America, I mean, so David Stern's like, view to globalize the NBA, right? And now you look at the fact that the NBA MVPs, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's Canadian, so therefore you've had no Americans have won it for nearly a decade now. That, to me, sets its own tone, right? And you look at the Europeans, you've got Giannis from Greece, obviously. You've got Joel Embiid won it and representing Africa, although obviously defected to the US. You've got Nikola Jokic, who's obviously a fantastic basketball player and the best in the world, regardless of whether Shai was to go and win it again. And you look at the fact that that has happened, people would have thought that was completely nonsensical in the 1990s and maybe the early part of the new millennium. So that cultural shift, it's the seeds that are sown at this point that you will view the impact of that 2040s, 2050s, right? It's going to take a long, long, long time to see the impact that the decisions being made now are going to have on a macro level. But in a micro level, there's some really interesting melting pots here. There's some really interesting markets and some really interesting things happening. In terms of looking at the markets and the bids that are in so far and that sort of thing, Aris, are there any particular markets or groups or anything that you're intrigued by and watching closely? I mean, you'll be watching them all closely, but any that particularly pique your interest?
I think that, we already talked about the UK, which is interesting because it never happened before. And also, I'm very curious to see what will happen in Milan. Because Milan, right now, it's the only city where we know for a fact that while there is an established dynasty, basketball dynasty in the city, there is interest from two fans, and there is also the idea of moving a historical club like Varese from their city to Milan. for me, this is a very, very big gamble. If that was the only option I would have, I wouldn't do it. Even if you put me at a gunpoint. But I totally understand that business is business. So this even may happen, and this also triggers me. And I disagree on one aspect about what you said, that this is going to be a long story. It's going to be a long story if there's still division in the next few years. The best case scenario is that this will be a very short story, and by the summer, when the NBA needs to make official announcements, the announcements will be a collaboration of all sides involved.
I'm talking more about the piece when it comes to the impact that NBA Europe could maybe have sort of moving forward. I think that's the thing, but I think you do make a good point. This could go down a direction where it's pretty clear that it's going to be people working together for the betterment of trying to make this happen. In terms of just how sort of Europeans are looking at the potential of this story and the impact that it could have, what is your read on Europeans maybe thinking that, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is it somewhere in between? Or is the thinking maybe a bit more just let's wait and see what happens before we come to any conclusions?
First of all, because this will be also, I guess, a podcast that will reach the US audience. The US audience has to understand that there is always a political aspect in all talks around Europe. So this may not be favorable to them, but let's stick to sports. In my opinion, the discussion will be centered for the core audience, for the fans around their club. If their club is included or not included in the new league, if it's pro EuroLeague or pro NBA Europe, that will be the main point of discussion. I don't think, and this is something that I have communicated on a personal level on many heads of sports, that I don't think that the policies, the political aspect of organization and of leagues are of great interest to the general public. The general public is interested on the game and on their club. So yes, a part of the audience will follow all these things unfold, but for the majority, the question will boil down to one thing. Does my team play in the new league? And if NBA Europe is successful, then the question may change and be, should my club be in the new league? So the rest of the staff is very good for us as a journalist. It's very good for a very specialized part of the audience that maybe have also interest on the business of the sports. But for the general audience, I think that this is an afterthought or even gibberish.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of food for thought there. I suppose to kind of wrap up the discussion, and thank you, Aris, for being so generous with your time, and hopefully everyone out there who has been watching has enjoyed hearing the insights of someone who's so well connected to the ecosystem of European basketball. But when it comes to this story, it seems to me that we're reaching, I mean, you could say a crunch point, but maybe a convergence point, right? But definitely the as a catalytic point for what's to come, an imperative moment. So if that's the case, what is your understanding of what the EuroLeague's, I don't want to say gripes are, but almost their key points that they need ironed out, and then the NBA's key points that they need ironed out going into the meeting that is happening in April?
I think that the main issue that right now is complicating things is first and foremost the fact that NBA Europe is not interested in having franchises in some of the cities where currently we have EuroLeague shareholders. Mm-hmm. So this is a big issue. And honestly, I like Baskonia, but I can't imagine any scenario in which NBA Europe will have a franchise in Vitoria. Simply, there is no way. So this is the first thing that somehow has to be solved. I don't know how. I don't know what will be decided. But ultimately, it goes down to the financial data and the size of the market of each club and each city. This is the first part. The second part is that if there is money on the table, and we know that there is money on the table, there must be a discussion on the financial aspect on how this money will be used, where it will end up, how it will be divided. For example, the NBA said in all tones that there is no way that a team will enter NBA Europe, no matter their status, without paying a fee. I don't think that this is something that the EuroLeague shareholders are really considering as an option. So there are a lot of stuff that are still totally unknown. I can't even make educated guess about what will happen because I can't get to the mindset of its owner and of its club. And there might be details behind the scenes that we don't know about. So yes, in my book, and I think that this is, should be said in all tones, in the end, for the good of the sport, some kind of compromise should be, let's say, the way to go. But this compromise should include everyone taking at least one step back.
Well, lots to think on, lots that we've chewed over there. And for anyone watching, obviously something a bit different on the crossover this week. We are primarily a briefing on all matters pertaining to this, but as well as sort of rolling with the punches and when the story moves, we move. We also have moments like this where we pause for reflection, offers me a chance to offer a few of my own thoughts and opinions and get experts like Aris on to try and give us his as well. So Aris, for anyone who isn't aware of where you are and where to find your work, where can they do so?
I am the EuroHoops Publishing Director. I have also to state, just for clarity, that I'm the communication officer of the EuroLeague Head Coaches Board, which is essentially the union of the EuroLeague coaches. And I also commentate NBA and BCL games, and I'm also a basketball reporter at Cosmote TV, which is the local right holder in Greece of the NBA. So you can say that I wouldn't use the word impartial, because this is also a word that is very badly used in my country and is used in order to mask some situation, but at least I'm a guy who are involved with both sides.
A very diplomatic response from a man who certainly knows how to handle himself in these situations. So we'll wrap up there for the crossover NBA Europe this week. You know where to find us at NBA Europe Pod on socials. And if you want to give your own opinion, give your own thoughts, or even share with your friends where to find us, then please do so. I've been your host, Stuart Hodge. Stay safe.
Across languages, across leagues, across Europe. This is the crossover, NBA Europe, where basketball meets boardrooms with Stuart Hodge.